Hey, this is Punk News editor and interviewer Ricky Frankel, bringing you another audio interview. This one will also be written as well, as you'll probably see on Punk News. But this time I'm bringing you an interview with Spike Slauson of Me First and the Gimme Gimmies, U-Cunt, and The Revolt. We talk about the future of the U-Cunt project. We talk about The Revolt getting back together and getting into the studio. We also talk about Me First and the Gimme Gimmies' new release called Rake It In, The Greatest Hits, which came out on April 7th through Fat Records. We also talked about Punk Rock Bowling. We talked about TMZ publishing the band's writer, which is weird. We also talked about what it's like having Jay Bentley on stage as opposed to Fat Mike, which I believe Jay Bentley will be on tour with them and playing with them at Punk Rock Bowling this year. We also talked about a whole bunch of other stuff, especially when it comes to licensing Me First and the Gimme Gimme songs, because they're all covers. Anyway, I want to thank Aubin Paul, Adam White, John Gentile, Greg Simpson, who produces our podcast as usual. Thank you guys. I want to thank my younger brother Andrew for helping me put this one together. And as always, as well, I also want to thank Brian Prates for the awesome intro music that he recorded for me. So before we get started with the interview, let's listen to a song from Me First and the Gimme Gimme's new release, Rake It In, The Greatest Hits. Here is Straight Up by Me First and the Gimme Gimme's. Here it is. The one and only Spike Slauson from Me First and the Gimme Gimmies, U-Cunt, and a bunch of other stuff. Spike, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, we're doing this on.
What are you on the Eastern time or?
No, I'm on the West Coast. I'm in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay, great. The San Francisco of the '90s.
Yeah, exactly. So first question is, have Me First and the Gimme Gimme Gimmes ever gotten a reaction straight from the artist that the band has covered?
The most notable one that I can think of is when we requested a sync license. You see, like, you got to get permission to do videos, whereas I think sound recordings are covered under, like, satire, under, like, intellectual property law. Like, I think they are. Like, it's kind of a jungle, as far as I can tell. But when you want to do a video to any song, as misguided as that desire may be, you have to get a sync license from the group. And so our choice for a song for a video for a song from the Love Their Country record, we made the dubious choice of Desperado. And so we contacted the Eagles management, and they responded really quickly, and they said no, like, emphatically no, and furthermore, the band wants you to know that they hate your version.
Oh my god. So how did you guys react?
You know what I mean? Like, well, sometimes, you know, sometimes it's worth getting up in the morning, you know what I mean? Sometimes, right. Sometimes, you know, that's a gift from heaven, you know? Like, that's a red badge of courage. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like the we got booed by 25,000 suburban, like, Pittsburgh area people at a ballpark one time. And the present tense, I'm not going to pretend that it was, like, fun or like a positive experience or anything like that. But looking back on it, had they done anything else, I would have felt insulted, you know? Considering they're, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Consider that collective sensibility that you're dealing with. Like, they weren't even Pittsburghers, man. They were Western Pennsylvanians in for, like, a fireworks night. They were, like, Rascal Flatts fans. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And had they done anything else, had they, like, cheered or applauded, I might have seriously started, like, reconsidering my choices in life and in music. But, the fact that they booed just was kind of like positive reinforcement for me. And it was the same with the Eagles or their management. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, so.
So I,
yeah, that's the only one that I know of.
So, that's actually pretty funny. That brings me to my next question. I mean, so you said it's usually covered under parody, but I mean, do you know if it, I mean, has it ever been a difficult process to have to license these, or you guys are covered under parody?
Well, it's covered under parody or satire, I assume. And then, I think the label has some sort of deal where they keep something like on retainer or on reserve, you know, to pay any licentious songwriter or family of said songwriter, if that makes sense. You know,
so, like,
it
just
only
in case.
Sometimes makes sense to me. Yeah. Well, because, you know, if somebody gets mad, you know, then they can sort of make your life uncomfortable no matter what the law is.
Right.
Like, that's kind of the law.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's so unfortunate. And then they put that lady on TV whose tits got cut off by accident, and then everybody remembers, oh yeah, we need lawyers. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
you remember,
right.
You know, like, every time they try to reform tort law, that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And even I kind of shut up, like, oh yeah, that's right, her. You know?
Right. What theme have the Me First and the Gimme Gimmes not done for an album that you would want to do in the future?
You know, like, I would actually prefer to double down on the AM Gold. You know what I mean? Like, if I were just to ride something off into the sunset, you know, and not necessarily, like, one full length adhering to one particular theme, but, like, several 7 inches.
Yeah.
Say, for example, it would be to continue in the AM Gold vein. and maybe show tunes, you know, that seemed more of a natural fit for us than anything else we did. Not to say that there weren't, songs here and there that were standouts, but as far as thematically, I think the part of the genius of choosing those songs, and it wasn't mine. I can say genius because it wasn't any of my doing, but it was other people picking these songs that I didn't like, but that I was able to put love and humanity behind. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Really bitter irony too. There's an irony to it because I don't like I don't hate Barry Manilow, you know what I mean? As a person, you know, and I don't feel that strongly about his body of work, but I don't like it, but I really enjoy playing those songs live and John Denver songs too, which I would feel the same way. He's by no means my favorite artist or composer, but something about, and that was where, because the band just plays as well as it can play, you know? And, so the selection was kind of where the art or the science or whatever kind of lived. And that was more like Mike and Joey picking songs. Because had it been me, I would have just picked songs that I liked, which is not ultimately how the thing works.
Right. So
did that answer your question? Now I forget what the question was.
No, you answered it. You answered it. It was you did. Don't worry. My next question is on April 7th. You guys, Me First and the Gimme Gimmes will release. But this will probably be out by the time. The album's out, but it's called Rake It In, The Greatest Hits. Why was now the time for the band to release a greatest hits album? Why now?
We've been a band for about 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't done anything that was sort of, self-described as such as a best of record. That where we've come to as a touring live playing band is a sort of review, almost like a Vegas review of this sort of big song list that we got. And these are the songs that we keep coming back to when we play live. Mm-hmm. And we've been having a lot of fun, and more people have been coming out in certain places, like Europe in particular. And in a few weeks, we're going to start taking it out to our home continent, and hopefully we'll have the same sort of fun and success here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all kind of based around this list that we've called out of the bigger song list. Like some of our favorites, especially to play live.
Mm-hmm.
And then just some surprises here and there, like City of New Orleans, which we hadn't thought of for a long time. And then somebody listened to it and said, hey, let's throw this on a best of. Yeah, by turns, you could either look at it as a cynical ploy to make money from a dying industry. Because the title itself, it's pretty cynical, but I don't mind,
Sure.
I think people even the consumers might be self-conscious of it and not mind. So there was that whole Cash from Chaos thing back in the 70s too. And nobody seemed to mind that.
Right.
That sold them even more records, And they were making fun of selling records, I guess, But it's kind of where we're at. It's these are our favorite songs to play. And, and we wanted to show off our new outfits. they are featured prominently on the new record.
They are, yeah.
Yeah, we got and we can't take credit for that. Our sartorial flair is due to our wardrobe specialist, Audra and her genius vision of American Schlager. See, now that's a theme. Schlager is a theme that I might do a whole record on, but I think it would only be popular in Germany and Austria, maybe parts of Switzerland. but it's like a weird, it's like an American version of Schlager. That's the closest thing that I can kind of describe it as. I don't know if you're familiar with German Schlager culture or Schlager music.
Not really.
It's like a way to describe, it's a way to describe pop. You know, it was this kind of German pop that was like really, like almost self-consciously trashy, but like also really shiny and a lot of sequins and like different colors of lamé, you know, and just like Cuban heels, stuff like that.
Right.
And just really bad German like pop music. But then now, like if you were to talk to people, like say at a Gimme Gimme show in Germany, or just, you know, some Turbo Jugend guy or something like that. You know what I mean? Like right. Somewhere in the vicinity of your frame of reference musically, like, and then you talk to them about certain Schlager acts and like the way that they enjoy this music is without nearly as much irony as you and I might expect. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. They love it. Like, kind of like people like me and you that might watch the Kardashians. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right,
like,
yeah.
Like, pretend to give it like five layers of irony and sarcasm and cynicism, but still you turn it on every day.
Right.
And watch it because it's just like this beautiful train wreck. Not necessarily the Kardashians, man. I think the golden age of reality TV, you know, was probably that second season of like Jersey Shore. Right. You know what I mean? Like, or like The Surreal Life or something like that, where it's just like, this is like, you can almost be proud of it because nowhere else in the world is doing that, you know,
mm-hmm.
or at least not as well. And that's kind of like Schlager is like a distant parallel. You know, with a lot of crucial differences, but at the same time, like, it's like German Schlager culture is, you know, check it out. Heino was, I think he qualified as a Schlager artist.
I will.
Thomas Dieter Kuhn. That's another new guy. He's the guy that that everybody, like young and old, like, love this guy now. And like I said, without not nearly as ironically as you would expect, like really you just straight up like, no, we just love this guy. And supposedly like he dresses, you know what I mean? Like he perms curls into his hair. I think he even puts on like a hairy chest, like a fake, like rug on his chest. He has gold microphones and like, you know, shiny silk shirts and stuff. But, and that's to perform. But then he shows up to the show in like a black lips shirt and Chuck Taylors. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then that's how he leaves. You know what I mean? And just changes into this crazy persona, you know, what? And they love him. Germans love him. Like he's on posters on the sides of buildings. So he not only has this sort of like pop appeal, but he also has this weird, like niche kitsch appeal too.
So do you see this release as something more for diehard fans or more as something that could be used as like an introduction for younger punk fans?
I would almost say that diehard fans that have everything, they would already have most of this stuff. And aside from like, say, if they wanted to, just add it to their collection resentfully, you know what I mean? Like, goddamn. You know what I mean? Like they had to put something else out and I had to buy it. But, you know, like aside from that, I would say like the diehards, you know, like there might not be as much in it as there would be for sort of people that might be new to it. It's sort of it does what iTunes does. You know what I mean? It parses
right.
the best from, you know,
right.
So like, why could, you know, why not do it ourselves? And maybe try to sell an entire record. We'll see about that, but you know. Disruption. Like, it's got to be good, right? For right. somebody. Innovation, disruption.
So were there any, so for your last release, were there any covers that you wanted to do for Are We Not Men, We Are Diva that didn't make it on?
No, in fact, we were trying really hard to fill the record out, man. You know what I mean?
Really?
And that's the issue with themes is yeah, because, it's just kind of like, it's weird what happens when people get together and play music, you know, like, mm-hmm. like there's, it never happens the way you expect it to, or maybe want it to. Like I heard, I think I read somewhere, or I heard from somebody that read somewhere, that the Talking Heads, what they wanted to sound like was a Motown band. Like, they wanted to sound exactly like a Motown era soul band. Mm-hmm. They couldn't. So now we have the Talking Heads. Whether you like them or not, they're not my favorite band in the world, but I understand why people like them, you know, and I acknowledge their body of work and their historical and cultural relevance, but they weren't what they envisioned themselves being, apparently. And that's why they are this unique thing and occupy this space in history, if that makes any sense. So it's like, you can only sort of do the song, five people together playing music in a room can only sort of do what they do, which is why I say that the selection process was where that was where the real creativity was. I don't know if I answered your question though.
No, you did. You did. I mean, I wasn't sure. Like, I mean, you guys were going for divas. I mean, I thought I had read that Fat Mike had said that a lot of the songs also just didn't, a lot of the songs that they considered just didn't have like an actual chord progression. It was just kind of like pop crap. So like that, I thought that's why like a Britney Spears song, for example, didn't make the record. So, that's sort of
right. But man, like Poison, that song, mm-hmm. like I love that song. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm not gonna cover it in, you know, layers of irony or sarcasm or anything like that. Like, I love that song. Like, I know she didn't write it,
right.
but like she was the one that performed it and did that kind of rad, weird video too, mm-hmm. you know? But yeah, that didn't work either because it's got this specific, like kind of like anything, any pop songs, like kind of like more recent, are sort of R&B inflected.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, sort of by definition mean that a really well-established rhythm pattern is there. And that does not always translate. Usually, like, it's the AM gold stuff that's either to, like, a 4-4 time that you can double up or, like, nothing at all. Like, you know, it's in time, but there's no, like, discernible drum pattern to it. That's generally the stuff that, like, that when we play it, it sounds different enough. It sounds like a new song,
mm-hmm.
you know, like the other stuff. It doesn't, it sounds like you're taking a few steps backwards, but yeah, like songs like Britney Spears, but then, you know, we could have gone back and done things like Eartha Kitt, you know, but like a lot of the other guys in the band, that's not necessarily in their, you know, in their frame of reference or somebody that they would consider a diva. I don't know. It's and again, it's like the parameters of the themes can sometimes, you know,
mm-hmm.
they can either be too narrow or be too stretched too far. I think where we really hit our stride was very early on with things like Show Tunes and AM Gold. And those are consistently people's favorites. Like when we play them live.
You guys are going to be hitting the road soon. You guys are touring though without Fat Mike and have substituted him with Jay Bentley from Bad Religion playing bass.
Indeed.
What is the difference when touring with Jay and when touring with Fat Mike?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, Fat Mike. Everything about him is kind of larger than life, and I think the most that puts a lot of pressure on him, and so I think he's trying to at least for the time being, probably only for the time being, to travel a little bit less, because it really fucks with your perspective and your sense of self, and you know it's hard to stay centered. It's just a very strange environment, and also he's really busy. So if that gives you any idea, if that gives you a discreet idea of what touring with him as opposed to Jay Bentley is like. Jay Bentley is just he's one of those Southern Californians. Like, I don't know if you're from there.
Yeah, I am.
So there's a kind of Southern, and it's generally native Southern Californian. It's not like the some kind of bullshit that people imported, but he fits like an archetype that I've come to appreciate over the years, over the time that I've spent in California, you know, and just laid back, you know, and smart, gracious, gentlemanly, but when it counts, like a wild animal on the stage, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like you can tell that he's enjoying himself.
Cool. Now this was just random. When I saw, at least to me, when I saw it, TMZ recently got a hold of Me First and the Gimme Gimme's writer and published it. Like, how did that happen? And I why does the band need two whole chickens?
Two whole cooked chickens.
Oh, cooked chickens. Okay.
Mind you.
Yeah.
You know, you know, but you know, it's more funny if you don't specify. I don't know, man.
It was just such a weird story that they published. Years,
yeah, you learn to, you know, it just kind of builds up over the years. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't seem weird when you're adding these things, but then when you look at it 10 years later, it does. And that's great.
Oh God. I just saw it. I'm like, what, like there, I'm just like, what does this, I'm just thinking like, how is this a story? Like what does it matter?
No, yeah, I don't, you know, like that it's our culture, man. Like it's, you know, and it's, and we're exporting it, you know?
Yeah.
Like you think Brexit would have happened without American reality TV culture?
I never actually considered connecting the two.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, that's, I don't know the last time you were out there, but like over the last 20 years, just the last 20 years. And then a lot of people, you know, who, cause that's about as long as I've been like traveling there. But other people who've been there, I'm sure would put the timeline a lot longer. But there's been this real dumbing down of that, of English culture. And it's gotten, I think people would say it's gotten really pronounced very recently in the last decade or two. And a lot of people out there ascribe it to American like reality show culture because they're really popular out there. Like their version of Jersey Shore is this show called Geordie Shore. The Geordies are the people that live up and around Newcastle.
Oh, you know, I think I've seen that like on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the even like the minimal, inhibition that the Jersey Shore people had towards like, just like, you know, attacking one another. The Geordies, like they show no compunction. You know what I mean? Like yeah. They just like, are all in with like feet, teeth, shivs. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm sure they don't show that, but like they're animals, man. And it like their culture seems to be like sinking into this like really American kind of dystopian. And then I'm sure austerity measures didn't help either. You know, like you make people suffer for reasons that they like had nothing to do with. And only maybe peripherally understand, you know?
Yeah.
It creates a kind of disconnect. What was the question?
I was asking like how did TMZ got a hold of the Gimme's writer and published it. How did that happen?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, white people respond to certain things because our expectations have been tweaked and attenuated and distorted and perverted by our by the weird cracked mirror we hold up to ourselves, I think. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like and then we convince ourselves that we want it. Because right. If we didn't want it, you know, why would we be getting it? It's just this really weird, it's like bleached assholes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Okay. Like, you think you like my shaved nether region? You know what? I'm going to bleach my asshole and you're going to convince yourself that you love it. You know what I mean? And,
right.
And everybody else is going to convince that and say that it's the shit.
Mm-hmm.
When in actuality, it's a fucking abomination. Like, if you look at it, like, I don't mean it that way. I don't mean it in any kind of moral way. I just mean, like, step back, humanity, and look at yourselves, man. Fun to look at, too. Like, that's the thing. It's no matter how involved in it or invested in it you are, like, when you look at it on TV, it's still fun to watch and ridicule.
Yeah.
So it's just this self-perpetuating, you know. So, yeah, we want two chickens, man. We want two chickens, and what else did it say?
I don't have it in front of me, but it looked like, I think, Jameson vodka. I feel like that would be standard stuff.
Sure, yeah. That's normal.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, look at what Danzig wanted. Wasn't there a famous, didn't one of his writers get, like, he wanted young women that, like, you know, were well-versed in, like, Eastern European literature from, like, a certain period. You know what I mean? Like, it was just please, if you could provide that, you know what I mean? Otherwise, you know. I don't know where we're at or where we're going, man. But, you know, we keep having babies and, you know.
Yeah. So I
keep telling them that they you know aren't pretty enough or they're too fat or you know what I mean or mm-hmm. or you know it's don't have enough money.
Yeah.
No, it's beautiful. It's feels like the fall of Rome or something like that right now.
I know the Revolts were back in the studio fairly recently. And
just the other day, in fact.
Oh, very nice. I know they've played a couple shows in Northern California. What progress has been made on the project since those announcements? And what news can you share at this point?
We're close to like completion as far as like tracking is concerned. And, which is a great thing to be able to say, cause it's been a really long time. Cause I've been doing it on my own dime and, you know, as like we said before, like LA is the San Francisco of the 90s. And that's because like everybody from San Francisco fucking moved down there
mm-hmm.
and kind of colonized that part, like east of Western and west of the river.
Right.
You know, but the reason they did that was like starting with the first tech boom, like that's when like the prices here got just crazy, you know, and then the second tech boom, they got absurd. And then I think like you would notice like demographically and like as far as like the costs like LA got more expensive around then too
mm-hmm.
and kind of got like the first wave of, you know, we'll just for the sake of argument say San Franciscans that kind of colonized downtown.
Yeah,
like now downtown is like, at first it was like walking on the moon. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not supposed to be here, man. You know what I mean? And then now, like, suddenly it is what it is. It's like you're in the East Village in New York or something. Really, really strange. But ultimately positive. because you see people in fucking Dodgers hats now. Whereas, like, when I first started going to Los Angeles, like, L.A. was just this slum that was next to Hollywood, which was also a slum.
Right.
But, like, it was still, like, the locus of, like, activity.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's a weird thing. So it's hard to find people to collaborate with in San Francisco, or serious people. And also, San Francisco has always been the place, unlike Los Angeles, and this is actually something I prefer about down there, one of the few things, is that ambition is not ridiculed down there. Whereas up here, ambition is ridiculed, so that, like, the people that belong to this, that feed into and sustain themselves from, like, sort of the status quo, they're free to half-ass. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Because they ridicule people's ambition, especially creative ambition.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know what happens when you do that? You get supplanted by people who don't, by these evil, rich cunts that don't. These are very ambitious people that are up here right now, and they want all your shit. They don't want to live in Pacific Heights anymore. They want the Mission. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're going to start creeping into the fucking Tenderloin now. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I don't know. I don't know. So it's hard to find, like-minded collaborators these days, you know?
Interesting.
The East Bay is your best bet.
Hmm.
They're still here. We're still, there are still people with unique rent situations or, you know, enough income to be relatively independent, but, like, we can't leave or we'll never be able to come back.
Yeah. When you said you were tracking, is that a full length or an EP for the Revolts?
It's an EP. I think we're going to do it like a similar format to the last one, like a 6-song 10-inch record. Just that, you know,
okay, cool.
I like the way that stands out, and I just kind of like the time of an EP.
Mm-hmm.
About a half hour or just under. I think that's where people's attention spans are at, and it gives you something. To me, it, like, if you narrow the field, you're more likely to, and this is solely, like, a practical consideration, but, like, you're more likely to sell something because it resonates more as a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's the one good thing about, innovation and disruption in the way music is bought and sold, is that it sort of separates the wheat from the chaff. The one good thing. Like, assuming there were a universal basic income, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which that goes for, like, all industries that are being disrupted or have been since, you know, the 60s or 70s, that, like, theoretically, if people had a universal basic income to fall back on, it's like, man, you guys have been doing records with, like, one or two good songs on them, and charging $17 for CDs and even more for LPs. Now I don't have to buy all your shitty fucking songs. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, maybe now you attenuate your expectations and your ambitions and your, like, sense of yourself as a musician or as an artist, and, you know, concentrate on the stuff that's good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Attenuate your ego a little bit and, you know, maybe not release quite so much stuff, but, concentrate more on what's good. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Like it reduces people's superfluous output, I think. Like a birthday party, for example. Not every song on a birthday party record is great. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, not every song from a birthday party would, like, I listen to on its own. But when you put a birthday party record on, like, from start to finish, you enter this weird, like, fucked up world. And it kind of, it changes you just, you know, maybe even imperceptibly, you know?
Right.
And that's what a record is supposed to be. And I think people sort of lost sight of that. like all records are supposed to be concept records, or else they were eventually, it was always going to happen one way or another, you know, like even home taping. You remember home taping is killing music?
Yeah.
Remember that whole campaign?
Yeah.
That the record industry, you know, like it's like I kind of felt the opposite. But then now, like, you know, without a universal basic income, you're kind of up shit creek. But then there are people who have been disrupted and out innovated that are in much worse shape. Like, I grew up in Pittsburgh in the 70s. So, like, I think that's a lot. That's a much starker case, you know?
Yeah.
Much more serious, much more. What's the word? Much more sympathetic, you know? Does that make sense?
Totally.
Or like LA, LA's manufacturing base. It was like to one degree or another, it happened everywhere. But Pittsburgh, it just so happens, was one of those cities where like so much of the economy and so much of people's lives was wrapped up in the steel industry that when it just kind of like bottomed out.
Yeah.
You know?
Hmm.
But then the saying that it bottomed out gives people a pass. It's like saying that neoliberalism isn't a decision, because it is a fucking decision. But we can talk about something else. So yeah, new Revolt tracks, man. Yeah, we're working on it.
Cool.
I think we got some great songs. We've been playing the songs live. We've had a lot of fucking time to consider what songs we like and what we like about them, and have culled it down to six or seven. I think we might have a B-side for a 7-inch too.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So, what does the future hold for your Uke Hunt, project, like touring, any new, like a new release on the horizon?
Yeah, I'm actually hoping that we get to tour back east a little bit later on in the year, like October. We're talking about that, about setting some shows up, going up into eastern Canada, coming back down the coast, into the States, New York, etc.
Mm-hmm.
My idea has been for a while now has been to do like an international, record of hits, like German songs, Italian songs, Spanish songs, you know, mm-hmm. especially Spanish, just because like that's like I've never been to South America with the Gimmies or with anybody else. So I would love to go. And Spanish is like English, maybe even more so. As far as like the people that listen to music in Spanish,
mm-hmm.
like that's a big world. I don't want to say market because it sounds very cynical, but you know, and there it's really weird how that works, man. When you go someplace and talk to people in their language or sing in their language, it's especially when they're used to listening to music only in, you know, one foreign tongue, you know, they really appreciate it. Plus, there are some great international hits that can only be sung in their original language. They only make sense.
Right. Got a couple more questions left, and then we'll finish up. Me First and the Gimme Gimmies will be playing Punk Rock Bowling in Las Vegas this May. When you're there, what is your favorite game when you're in Vegas?
My favorite game?
Mm-hmm.
Wheel of Fortune, I think, is probably that's my favorite slot. I don't really gamble so much anymore. Like, I like blackjack, you know what I mean? But mm-hmm. I don't really have the money to lose. So what I end up doing, like, I take a walk or two up and down Fremont Street because that's that kind of like that West Coast kind of entropy.
Yeah.
You know, that I've learned to love and appreciate, like the Tenderloin, Skid Row, East Hastings Street. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
City Heights. Like, it has that, like, you know, Tijuana. It has that weird sort of, like, and but then it's in the prism of Las Vegas too. So it kind of adds like a whole different thing to it. But Fremont Street is like, I hate the Strip, but I actually kind of like Fremont Street.
Cool.
You know, if you had told me 20 years ago, I would have said you're crazy, but no, I kind of like it. It's part of the West. It's got like an urban, dare I say, urban, like Western kind of quality to it. Does that answer the question?
Sure. Yeah.
Liberace Museum. Nowhere else has a Liberace Museum.
Yeah. Spike, thanks so much for doing this. Before we end this, is there anything else you would like to add that maybe we didn't touch upon?
Oof. No, I think we covered it. I think I like over covered it at some points.
Well, thank you so much for doing this interview. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Oh, not a problem. Why don't you take us out with a song from Rake It In?
Ooh. How about Leaving on a Jet Plane?
All right. Here's Leaving on a Jet Plane by me first in the Gimme Gimmies. Thanks again.
Thank you.
All my bags are packed and ready to go. I'm standing here outside the door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye. But the dawn is breaking, it's early morning. Taxi's waiting, it's blown its horn. Already I'm so lonesome I could die. So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. To go. So many times I let you down. There's so many times I fucked around. I tell you now, they don't mean nothing. There's every place I go, I'll think of you. Every song I sing, I'll sing for you. When I come back, I'll bring your wedding ring. So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. Cause I'm leaving on a jet plane. Don't know when I'll be back again. Oh babe, I hate to go. Now the time has come to leave you. One more time and let me kiss you. Close your eyes and I'll be on my way. Dream about the days to come when I won't have to leave alone. About the times and